Why stand still when you can run headfirst into a wall? You're listening to the Jocular Pugilists. $1,600 plus fees to go see Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks. $4,000 on resale. Are you kidding me? Who can afford this? Who are concerts for anymore? The wealthy? Are we back at the time of Mozart when entertainment is divided between the royal theater goers and the commoners? Folks, we have a problem. Tomas, when was the last time you went to a show and how much did you spend?
It was a couple months back. The tickets were about $40 a piece. It was a classical pianist and it was in Westchester, a gorgeous venue called Caramore. Little side note, when did we start paying for music? If you went into a tavern, you'd probably hear people playing instruments you didn't pay for it. When did we start paying for music? Well, the very first opera theater opened in 1637 in Venice. And although audiences were aristocratic, opera was dependent on the sale of admissions rather than royal patronage. And musical performances began to find an entirely new method of economic support, meaning the sale of the ticket. In the 1700s, the middle and the poorer classes primarily listened to music in public settings. Street performers and traveling musicians would offer entertainment to those who couldn't afford to go to concerts and operas. There were also public concerts and operas that were more accessible and affordable to the lower and middle classes. And actually, Mozart did give public performances during his lifetime. Mozart was highly sought after. He was a big deal. And many of his concerts were held in public venues such as salons, concert halls, and theaters that were open to wider audiences, including the middle and the lower classes. And in fact, these public concerts were a very important part of his income. It allowed him to showcase his abilities to a wider audience, and it spread and established his reputation throughout Europe. If you've ever seen the movie Amadeus, you'll remember he has the concert for the royals and for the upper class, and then he also has concerts that he's giving in these public theaters, which is a lot more rowdy. The audience is more rowdy. They're yelling at the performers. It's a different vibe. So I guess, in some ways, in the 1700s, it was easier and more affordable to see a concert.
What about a mainstream concert?
It has been forever, and it's true. Part of the reason is the prices. It's hard to justify those ticket prices, and we're old enough to know what concert tickets used to cost.
That's right. The reason I started with Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks is they're coming to SoFi, and I really want to go. And those are real ticket prices for somewhere up. Now, granted, it's for somewhere up in the front. But for somewhere in the front, it was $1,600 per ticket plus fees. That's Ticketmaster, by the way. If you can't get one through Ticketmaster, the scalpers are paying online $4,000 to sit in the front section. That's crazy. And you're still talking $600 a ticket, even for way back. Who is the music for anymore? And this really hits home for me, and I know it does for you too, because we're musicians. You know, I grew up loving going to concerts. That's where I want to spend my money. But honestly, if you're talking between going to see Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks or going on a week-long vacation in Mexico or something like that, I'm going on vacation. You know what I mean?
I get it. I'm just looking at Billy Joel's tickets in New York right now. And remember, he's been playing New York. He plays New York all the time.
Madison Square Garden. Yeah, he's got like a residency.
So his cheaper tickets are $216.
And what's the high end?
$516.
I mean, it's not great, but it's way different than out here. That's a huge difference.
By the way, 216, even that, for me, I think, really?
I know, man.
Concert tickets have really outpaced inflation.
By the way, a little disclaimer. When I was making coffee before we started recording, I realized I didn't have any milk. So the only thing I did have was like a cold brew liqueur creamer that I used for my pot of coffee. So if I'm a little loopy during this podcast, it's my fault. I apologize.
Phil has two cats, and I just was picturing him milking one of his cats. seems bad that I pictured that, but let's not go there.
That's a weird place to go first. but you know. So look, I understand capitalism, and I get, you know, the idea of supply and demand, of course. But the thing is, there has to be a point where you say enough is enough. And when we go back and look at what ticket prices were when we were growing up and going to concerts, it's crazy the difference. And when you think about the bands, it's stark. So
it's pretty stark.
Like I went back and looked at a bunch of the tickets, right? And I went back to the 70s because, boy, I mean, we weren't going to concerts yet, but it felt like a good place to start.
I was. My first concert was in the 70s. I was seven.
What did you see at 7 years old?
Jethro Tull.
That's amazing. Were you just totally hooked?
Oh, my God. It's just the coolest thing ever. And I feel bad that I haven't brought my son to a big rock concert. I'm a musician. I never did it. There's multiple reasons I haven't done it. I waited till he was old enough. And when he got old enough, COVID hit.
You got to take him to The Who.
Yeah, I should do it. And I feel bad that I haven't. So that's the one I have to take him to. Even though it's not really, it's barely The Who at this point. But yeah, it's The Who. There's two of them. So,
speaking of The Who, let's go back to the 1970s, because the average cost of ticket prices ranged from $10 to $20 in the 70s.
And I do kind of remember it because I had that ticket stub, and I think it was somewhere in the vicinity of $17 to see Jethro Tull in 1978.
Now, there is inflation, but I promise you, and I should have looked up what $17 in the 70s is now. Maybe you could ask ChatGPT since we keep going to that. But it's certainly not $1,600. And by the way, $17, that could have been, back then, that could have been a front row or front section seat, because it really was, all the tickets were pretty much the same price. They didn't vary all that much depending on where you were sitting. So it was even a different structure of how it was set up. But imagine, we're talking the 70s. You're talking about Jethro Tull in their prime. Imagine you've got Led Zeppelin, The Who, you know, Pink Floyd, all of these incredibly classic, Rolling Stones, Aerosmith, in their prime. You're seeing them for between $10 and $20. That's for the masses. Mm. And that's what's bothering me. Ultimately, I think that's going to be the thread of this whole conversation, is who are we doing concerts for? You do them for the people who love the music and who love the bands, and you want it to be, I hate to use this word, but democratic, in the sense that everybody can afford to go see a show. And it is surpassing that now. We're no longer in the era of everybody can go see a show. It's very elitist.
By the way, $17 in 1978 is about $68 now. And I'm surprised.
Wow, I am too. I would have thought it would have been much more, actually.
Really? I would have thought less.
Oh, okay.
Which shows you do have to think of inflation. When you get older, you're just so stuck in the mud. How could it be that expensive?
Well, $68 to $1,600 is a big jump.
It's a huge jump. One of the questions I think everyone should have is, who's making the money? I think immediately you would think it's just got to be a greedy artist that's making all this money. And it could be. Part of it, at least, could be the artist. But it's certainly not the only element that is contributing to these exorbitant prices.
It's definitely not the only reason. We're going to just keep talking about that during this whole conversation, because it comes up over and over again. Why has this happened? From the 70s to now, there are different reasons at different times why ticket prices have escalated. But I promise you, we have not seen anything like the escalation we've seen in the last 3 years.
Oh, is that so?
Since the pandemic. It's incredible. Okay, so then we go to the 80s, and ticket prices were around $50, maybe $75, when we were going to see U2 or the Rolling Stones, if you wanted to get up close. That's when they started tiering tickets and ticket prices. So that is when I became aware of ticket scalping, which is actually in the late 80s. Just to, you know, a side note, I was a ticket scalper in the sense of, particularly in my senior year of high school, I would pay my way to a concert, because I loved going to concerts, by buying a section of tickets, maybe 4 or 8 tickets, selling them to friends who couldn't get them, and charging maybe a couple extra dollars per ticket, and telling them.
There's so many things that I don't know about you, and I don't know why.
Well,
How did I miss that?
I don't know. That's a good question, because you would think we would have been going to concerts together, but we didn't.
Did we never go to a concert together?
Not in high school. We definitely didn't.
Huh.
I know. It's weird. And I don't understand that.
It is strange.
So I paid for my prom with Bruce Springsteen tickets.
Okay.
It was the only way, because I didn't have a ton of money. I mean, I was working.
Who fronted you the money to buy the tickets in the first place?
Well, so that was money.
A loan shark.
Yeah, right. I know.
Since you have no collateral, I'm going to have to break your legs in advance.
Gosh, Mo, I use these all the time. Couldn't you just bash my head in?
Hey, are you a loan shark?
Big Phil would not have been happy about that. I was working, so I would use that money to then buy tickets, and then that would be when during the times that I couldn't work.
What a novel idea. You were working and you were in high school.
Yeah, I would be working over the summer, and then on the weekends until it got cold, I'd be working too. So I had cash.
That's another conversation that we can have. Kids don't work anymore. They just don't. And
that's
everyone
right.
We knew had jobs. We all had jobs. From 14 on, we all worked.
For me, I was going to concerts for free. And by the way, I was totally upfront. My friends knew. They were excited. I was very resourceful about how to get tickets. And I would always get good seats for concerts and then just say, hey, look, I'm gonna charge you an extra $5 or $10 so that I can go for free. And they were completely fine with that. I didn't actually start making money with the ticket scalping until my prom, where I had to say, I can't afford it, but I want to go. So here's what I'm going to do.
Right.
And then I kind of stopped after that. I would never go to the venue and sit outside and start.
I got smoking, no smoking, front row, back row.
Yeah, I was not that adventurous. There is a history. Ticket scalping, I thought that was a pretty recent thing. But ticket scalping, which is basically reselling tickets for a higher price than the original value, that's the definition of it, it dates back to the 19th century, which for those of you who don't know, that's the 1800s. We always get that wrong.
I get it right, but I always I think other people do. I'm not good at many things. I'm okay with that. Doesn't seem like a big ask to me. Minus 10, not a big ask.
It is. Right.
I said 10. Oh, my God.
There is no such thing as being bad at math.
How do I get it right when I don't even know the formula? Okay, go ahead.
You know, when you look at ticket scalping, for me, I always thought of it as something that happened with rock and roll, but it's been going on forever. But it really took off once you can go online and start scalping tickets. Well, it just exploded. Before, it was very illegal, and you'd have to do it, you know, in front of the venue, and you were in danger of getting caught, and it was kind of a shady thing. And by the way, you were also in danger of buying counterfeit tickets. That was going on a lot of the time when we were growing up and going to concerts in the 80s and 90s. There were a lot of times where you would think you were buying a genuine ticket that was just, you know, being scalped. Come to find out, it wasn't a legitimate ticket to the concert. So
yeah, that was the thing. It was sort of like the t-shirts. There's the legitimate t-shirts.
That's right.
And then outside, there was a whole lot of illegitimate t-shirts.
And actually, do you care whether it's a legitimate t-shirt or not anymore? Because some of the not ones are really good at this point.
I mean, I never thought about it when I was younger. Obviously, that means the artist is not getting money for the t-shirt.
That is true.
Making money as an artist has never been easy. So any extra money they can make probably is nice. And particularly now, how difficult it is. The amount of money you make as an artist has actually gone down over the past 20 years, not up.
So much. Yeah.
So if you want to help the artist, one way you can do it is, of course, you can go see them live, but you can also pay for merchandise, including music. And I do understand that with streaming services, you don't really have to pay for music anymore. But we should recognize that artists don't make that much money from streaming services. So a clear, easy way to support an artist that you like is to buy some merchandise. Regardless of whether you're going to be wearing a t-shirt or not, just buy it to support the artist. And, of course, buy their music. Even if you're streaming it already, buy it, and you're supporting the arts and supporting someone that you value.
You know, if you only have a certain amount of dollars, the artist does make much more when you go to the concert or when you buy merch than if you're buying their music online. I would say do not spend your money buying their music online, because that's the smallest amount that the artist is going to make. If they are putting out vinyl or hard copy CDs and you want to buy that, that's
worth it. I disagree. So I feel like, first off, regardless of what they're making, support the artist. I do know that artists that I'm listening to, and of course we're not talking about Avril Lavigne or
somebody that's current and relevant.
Yeah, so the average artist, if they own their music, and at this point most artists own their music, they're making about 70% of the sale of a song on Apple Music if you buy it. But if you're streaming it, you're making anywhere between 006 to 0.085. So for instance, if you had 1 million streams, you'd make somewhere between $6,000 to $8,000. If you sold 1 million downloads of one song, you're going to make $700,000. That's a big difference.
The argument is certainly not should or should you not buy stuff to support the artist. My argument was, if you have a limited amount of money, where should you spend it to where the artist gets the biggest bang for the buck? You know what I mean?
I get it. If you want to support the artist, you should go to the concert. It's a good way to support the artist. But what I'm saying is, if you can afford a concert ticket, and they're damn expensive, you could probably afford a dollar for a download of a song.
Okay, so let's move on to the 90s. Because this is actually a big decade as far as this conversation goes. And the reason is, in the early 90s, tickets were between $50 and $60 to go see big bands. Totally reasonable at that time, or it felt reasonable. Maybe a little expensive, but not bad. Then in 1994, and this is the first time I really noticed it and started to get upset and actually protested this by not going, the Eagles, who I was dying to see, they reunited for the Hell Freezes Over tour. And they were the very first $100 concert ticket. And that infuriated me. They literally doubled the price of what people were normally spending on concert tickets. And I would not go to that tour. Now, in 1995, they had the highest ticket sales because they were charging the most. They had 63.3 million in ticket sales. Every company, every band was going along with the program. And we're saying, oh my God, we just double the prices, people will still go, and we're going to make that much more in profit.
Capitalism, baby.
Yeah, supply and demand, like I said in the beginning, but at some point, you have to regulate.
Yeah, but not every band is the Eagles. So if Captain Beefheart or Wasp decides they're going to sell tickets for $100, someone has to buy them.
Well, but it gave license to every other touring band to say...
It's just shocking that people would pay those prices.
Yeah. At the time, I don't think they all started charging $100, but they all doubled their prices, whatever their price ticket for their ticket was. All of a sudden, in 1995, everybody started saying, hey. 1996, everybody started saying, hey. To the point where, and this is why they're heroes of mine, Pearl Jam actually had a lawsuit against Ticketmaster.
I remember this.
It was a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
And it was the antitrust division of the U.S. Department of Justice. On May 6, 1994, Pearl Jam basically said Ticketmaster has virtually an absolute monopoly on the distribution of tickets to concerts. They were saying that because Ticketmaster was buying out, I think at that point they had bought out Ticketron and some other companies. They were...
Oh, I forgot about those.
They were basically monopolizing, and then they can say, okay, well now we're the only game in town. If you want to go to a concert, here's what you're going to have to pay.
Right. If you're playing a venue, whatever it is, let's say you're playing a big place like Madison Square Garden, can you still buy the tickets from Madison Square Garden, or do you have to buy it from Ticketmaster?
It depends. That's a really great question, because the Hollywood Bowl out here will have events put on by the Hollywood Bowl, and then they will have events put on by Ticketmaster. You know, it's all negotiated, and it depends on the act, and it depends on whether the act negotiated directly with the venue or they went through Ticketmaster and Ticketmaster negotiated with the venue. For example, one of the recent concerts I went to that was very expensive, but not as expensive as it could have been. It was Duran Duran. I took Stacy to see them, and we got good seats.
You guys were hungry like the wolf.
We were very much so.
Could resist.
But because it was the Hollywood Bowl show, I was able to get good seats for a little over $300 a ticket, which... It may sound like a lot, but not comparative to if it were a Ticketmaster show, coming into the Hollywood Bowl, it would have been at least double that.
What I don't understand is why are people going through Ticketmaster? Theaters now with the web can sell tickets to anyone all around the world. What's the purpose of Ticketmaster?
It's a very good point. You got to wonder what kind of stranglehold they have on these venues or what kind of contracts they have with the artists where the artists can't, once they're signed in with Ticketmaster, they can't get out for a certain amount of years. Who knows what's behind the scenes there?
I never thought about that. So Ticketmaster might have contracts with artists.
Yes. Almost like a distribution company would for the music or for film.
So they have a stranglehold.
For right now. I mean, but you're making a great point. I mean, what does that landscape look like in 10 years when artists and venues start realizing, to your point, everything's online now. What do we need Ticketmaster for? Jacking up the prices on us and making it more difficult. See, it's going to keep working until people stop being able to afford those crazy ticket prices. But the process that they've put into place in the last few years is what's responsible for it. And we're seeing it in other industries too. Let's get there. But let me kind of finish with this Pearl Jam thing. So the only way they could attack Ticketmaster at this time was to go through this monopoly law. Like, it's against the law in the United States to have a complete monopoly in an industry. A lot of companies still try, and you hear these massive mergers, but it's an antitrust law, and you're not supposed to have that.
Good old Teddy Roosevelt.
That's exactly right. And so that was their way of fighting back. And, you know, for a while they stopped touring, but then they started doing these small tours where they would negotiate directly with the venues. And you could go see Pearl Jam at that time when everybody else was doing $100 a ticket. Pearl Jam was doing $35, $40 a ticket. It was really a statement. And I was hoping, you know, they were such a big band that if they had gotten some other big bands to go along with this, it could have broken that cycle. But unfortunately, it did not. I don't mean to just bash Ticketmaster because there are so many other things that are reasons that prices go up. It's just that what I keep going back to is when you look at the difference between buying it today directly from the venue on a venue-owned show versus buying a show from Ticketmaster, it is a huge, huge difference.
It would be interesting, Phil, because we're older, we're looking at older artists, and you're interested in older artists.
For sure.
What does a newer artist charge for a concert?
We will get to that. As always, you have excellent questions. You know, we hit the 2000s, and before the pandemic, I remember going to see the Temple of the Dog. It was the last tour before Chris Cornell passed away. I had really good tickets, and even those tickets, I think, were only $200 each. Those tickets now, I mean, you're talking $1,000. We come to today, and there are the rise of VIP packages, which are even more expensive. That's a new thing that people are doing. Since 2019 to today, ticket prices have just in general, I would say the exceptional concerts way more than this, but just in general across the board, so all bands, 20% more since 2019.
Wow.
That's a huge jump.
Is this just in LA or is this everywhere?
No, this is everywhere, at least in the United States, including all venues, all states, everything. So why is this? There is something called dynamic pricing. Do you know what dynamic pricing is?
I mean, I get the idea, dynamic, so it must be fluctuating depending on demand.
Dude, you're a genius. Again, you're a genius. Yes, that is absolutely what it is.
Again, why he's my friend.
And we see this in other industries, particularly in Uber and Lyft. Uber and Lyft have dynamic pricing. And I think they're the ones who actually started it.
Well, airline tickets probably did it prior before that.
A great point. Airline tickets for sure do it. And what does that mean? It means when things are surging, like around holidays, so you want to buy your plane ticket around a holiday, we all know you're going to be paying three times the amount that you normally would pay. Yeah. Uber and Lyft.
Right.
On an off time, a ride might cost you $20 or $25. During a surge, it could cost you $100. That's a huge jump. And what's starting to happen and what we're starting to see is that, you know, people are starting to find ways to avoid Uber and Lyft because it's just getting ridiculous. Or they're carpooling more in Uber and Lyft. They're not doing the rides like they were when Uber and Lyft had first come out and it was a great service and it was an alternative to cabs and all of that thing. This dynamic pricing is starting to price people out of Uber and Lyft. And the speculation for those companies is not good. A lot of investors are saying, you might want to get out if you own those stocks. If you price out of the market or price in this extreme way,
yeah,
eventually people will say no.
And that's the problem with capitalism, credit. Credit cards allow us to purchase things whether we should or shouldn't. And that just keeps prices going up.
Yeah.
By the way, I just looked up what the average price of a concert ticket is across America.
Okay, great.
And the state that has the highest price for concert tickets is your state, California. And the place, Los Angeles. That's the highest price of a concert anywhere in the United States of America.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me at all.
Then Las Vegas, then Houston, then San Diego. And believe it or not, New York is all the way down at number 7. So that's the 7th most expensive place to see a concert. And I'm surprised.
I am too, actually, now that I think about it. Although, based on some of the things you've told me about New York and what musicians are getting paid, and it doesn't actually surprise me. It sounds like there's something interesting going on. So you asked me about, you know, current artists. Taylor Swift tickets. Insanely priced. She is probably the biggest artist in the world right now. Similar to the Billy Joel, Stevie Nicks prices. $1,500 plus fees, up to thousands of dollars.
So $1,500 for a Ticketmaster
Correct.
Ticket. Again, this is not a scalp ticket. Seems bananas to me.
Harry Styles, $980 for a seat on the floor.
And these are all LA.
That one is in actually Toronto.
So is that Canadian? 900 Canadian?
US dollars.
US dollars.
So we're talking about a lot.
That's crazy, especially a younger person. How the hell are you going to afford
it? You put it on your credit card.
And then you default. They don't care. They give you another credit card.
Hey, do you mind paying for this? I don't have any cash.
Sure, I'll just put it on my credit card. I'm never going to pay it back anyway.
It's crazy. That's crazy.
You know, there are things like platinum pricing and meet and greets. And those types of things I can kind of understand, particularly if you're getting a chance to go backstage or meet the band. Or
I kind of understand it.
Yeah.
But it feels terrible. And who am I to say? Because I've never been in the position where someone's going to pay to meet me.
I would pay a couple dollars to meet you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Just something always felt wrong for me, that an artist would ask a fan to pay to meet them. They already support them.
Yeah, I agree.
Shouldn't they be grateful?
That's a really good point.
Years ago, I went to a Comic-Con. And that's not something I do, but I took Gabriel to a Comic-Con, and I'm sort of a Trekkie, but I don't care about anything Star Trek after 2000. Anything after 2000, even any of the modern movies, I just don't care about. But I love The Next Generation as well as the original series. And it just so happened at the Comic-Con I went to, I wasn't aware that this was going to happen, but we went there and we saw, oh my God, almost all of the crew of The Next Generation was at that Comic-Con. Patrick Stewart, the actor that plays Data.
I'm an android. Lieutenant Commander Data.
Brent Spiner, by the way.
Brent Spiner. Yeah, that is his name.
I'm a geek as well.
You knew I couldn't remember it, so I'm not that much of a Trekkie. Anyway, I was really taken back when I realized they charge money for autographs and for meet and greets. So when I was with Gabriel, I naively got online thinking, oh my gosh, we can meet some of the actors from Star Trek. This is amazing. And as we were online, I look and I see signs. What's that? $40 for an autograph? And what, $80 to meet them? Yeah. What's going on? And of course, it depended on who the actor was as to how expensive each thing was. So we gradually, Patrick Stewart, of course, was the most expensive, and it gradually went down in price.
Who was the least expensive? That's the real question.
Beverly's son, what was his name?
Oh, Wesley Crusher?
Was Wesley Crusher? Oh, that was like $3.
Sorry, bud. I like him, too.
I know this may finish me as an acting ensign, but...
Shut up, Wesley.
Anyway, I was so clueless that I didn't know that they did this sort of a thing. And for some reason, it left a bad taste in my mouth. I really lost, which maybe I shouldn't have, but I lost a little bit of respect for those actors. meaning people are still watching those shows. I'm sure you're making residuals for those shows. Do you really have to do this?
That's a good point. But I will say the nature of how actors get paid, particularly with streaming, is changing. So a lot of these actors who end up on one of these superhero TV shows or you know, sci-fi shows, when all of a sudden their career, they have a lull, they can keep an income, which is great because otherwise, I mean, we don't think about this because we think about how much money actors make and all of that, which is, of course, if you get those roles, you do make crazy money. But when they're not making money, it's terrifying for a lot of them because they have their families to support. And
all right. So maybe I'm being naive and I, you know, if I can help in some way, I would help. I get it. So back to concerts.
Really, we're sort of at the end of our conversation, but I want to leave you with this question or ask you this question. Is it time for a little bit of a stricter regulation on this stuff? Because going back to my introduction, we are at the point where if you're an average worker in the United States, unless you're going into credit card debt, you cannot afford to go to concerts. And that's not fair. And that's not good for the industry. It's not good for society. We need to be able to have our entertainment. We need to be able to get culture. We need to be able to afford to go to these things. So is it time for somebody to step in with some regulation? Not to say, I don't want to stifle capitalism or anything like that, but regulated capitalism is what the United States really stands for now, or should stand for, and does ever since you brought up Roosevelt.
Well, that's a huge question once you bring in regulation. And who knows? There's good regulation and there's bad regulation. And that's something you really, really have to think deeply about before you start doing it. But there are so many contributing factors that play a part in why concert tickets are so expensive. One thing you can do, simple thing, is just see a concert outside a big city. It's going to be much cheaper. Also, you can see a concert in a smaller venue. That should also be a little less expensive.
That's an argument to make, and in that might be what happens, is that people start going to these smaller clubs to see unknown artists to get their music fill.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't have to be unknown artists. It could be, so a band like King's X that Phil and I listened to in the late 80s, early 90s, they're not going to be that expensive
to
see.
Right, and I still go to see them whenever they come around.
But because they're playing in smaller venues, there are artists of that ilk, of that time period, that are classic artists. They're just not as famous. You want to see Pat Benatar, it's not going to break the bank. It's going to be a small venue. You want to see...
However, here's my problem with it. This is still price gouging.
Yeah, I get it. I'm just saying that if you want to say no, that's one way to fight it. Say, I'm not going to go to bigger venues until they're more affordable. And then they have to react. They'll have to react in some way. And then you can go to smaller venues. There's clubs. There's other things. There's smaller artists.
Are you saying that it's on us and the regulation there shouldn't be?
I'm saying that regulation is way too big a topic to get into in this. But what I'm saying is that it is up to you to buy the ticket. If you as an individual, if you don't buy a ticket, if enough people say, no, I'm not going to spend that kind of money anymore, they have to react to it. They have no choice. No consumers, no money. They will react. So in that way, it's always up to the consumer.
Not always.
Meaning if no one buys the tickets, there's no concert.
It's mostly on us, but should it be at some point when there's price gouging going on? There are laws against price gouging. For example, if there's a hurricane and insurance companies or gas prices shoot way up, that's against the law.
I get it.
So at what point do you say this is price gouging? And I think we're at that point. I believe it.
So I get it, Phil. But the problem with any law is that a law can have far-reaching consequences that are unintentional. So I'm always scared to create another law. There's so many goddamn laws. And one of the reasons it's so expensive is because there's so many laws. So one of the things that I didn't get into in the podcast, but I'll say quickly now, is that unions have there's some great to unions, but they've really, really hurt concert tickets in New York City and any big places that way. So for instance, if it all depends on the specifics of the concert, how big is the show, what are you bringing to the show, all of that stuff. So for instance, if it's a bigger concert where you have lighting, sound, you have load in, load out, all that stuff, when you're in New York City, certain venues have contracts with certain unions, and it's the law. You have to, okay? So you can't get around it. So, so what do? Well, you have to pay these unions. So, for instance, you might be only have enough, you might not be famous enough to sell out a larger venue for multiple nights. Well, too bad. The lighting and the union for lighting and the union for your soundboard and the union for load in the Teamsters that load you in and load you out, they're part of the thing. You're playing in New York, you're paying for them. Well, but hold on. As an artist, I have a lighting guy. I have a sound guy. I have all that stuff. We only have to deal with those unions in the big cities, but we're playing all around the United States of America. In fact, most of our money is made from all the other places. Why? I can't. I already pay for them. Why do I have to pay for a lighting guy from New York? Well, too bad. The unions have a monopoly on all of the theaters. You want to play in New York, you have no choice. So we've gotten to the point where if it's a larger theater, unless you can sell out that theater for multiple nights in a row, you're not going to make any money. So that means that most artists have to play smaller theaters or they have to play outside of New York City.
Actually, to your point, now that we're talking about this, and then we have to end because we're going way long. But to your point, that might be why Duran Duran played three nights in a row, because they were contracting directly with the venue, who probably have these union things they have to deal with.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So they did multiple dates. That's a really interesting point. Anyway, great conversation, and we could talk about that forever. But we are at the end of the show, so we are the Jocular Pugilists. Thanks for joining us for another episode. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find out more about us at thejocularpugilists.com. You can also support the podcast by going, if you haven't done so yet, by going to Apple Podcasts, leaving a 5-star rating and review, and subscribing to the podcast so it gets delivered right to your phone when a new one comes out. Tomas, I love to hate you, my man.
I hate to love you, and I guess I'll leave everybody with this thought. If you want to support an artist, go directly to them. Do it through their website. Buy merchandise from them. Buy music from them. Buy concert tickets from them. The most direct way you can go to an artist is the best way you can support them.
Great way to end the episode. That's 100% correct. All right, my man. I will see you next time.